Hi everyone, it's Eli. You know how sometimes you stumble upon something truly game-changing in healthcare? Well, I found it. Kinetisense. This cutting-edge motion capture technology is transforming movement, assessment, and recovery. Imagine getting instant AI-driven insights without any wearables on your patient. That's right, no ping pong balls needed. Just pure, accurate data. Perfect for boosting athletic performance, pinpointing imbalances, and refining rehab. Top professionals worldwide trust Kinetisense to maximize productivity and results. Check out our partner page to learn more. Experience the revolution in movement. Welcome to Wrap It Up Sports Medicine and More, the podcast that gives you a viewpoint in sports medicine that can't be found anywhere else. I'm your host, Eli Halleck, and we have a fantastic show ahead of us today. So let's get started. Welcome to Wrap It Up Sports Medicine and More. Today, we have Tim Masicki helping out from Loyola High School, who will be with us in just a minute. As every athletic trainer knows, every now and then there's something that happens and we've got to shift gears. He is shifting gears right now and taking care of a clinical patient on site. And speaking of shifting gears, today we will be interviewing Angela Bushmaker, friend and colleague and professional NHRA drag racer. Angela, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you, Eli?
I'm excited we got you on here because this has been, we've been working on this for a while. So
yep,
this
is long time coming.
Let's start and just tell our three listeners a little bit about yourself and let them know where you're at, what you do. And
So basically, like I think back to when I first started kind of with the idea of sports medicine, athletic training, I was in high school. I kind of went to the high school I went to. I graduated from Auburn High School up here in Auburn, Washington, and we had a phenomenal sports medicine program. And it was just one of those things that just kind of got me loving the job. And then I went on to Washington State University and completed their program. I was the first graduate assistant at Cal State Hayward, now Cal State East Bay.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah. So that was kind of a cool thing, kind of figuring out what worked, what didn't work, all that stuff, what sports. At the time we were D3, now they're D2. So I got to spend a lot of time with different sports, just getting a ton of experience, mostly by myself. You know, obviously we had our athletic trainers that worked with us, but I was also the young one and I was willing to travel and they had families and they had other jobs. It was one of those things that any opportunity I got, I took. And then life kind of, when I graduated, took me to Texas for a short 9 months. And then I headed back up to Washington, where I worked at a clinic outreach. Essentially, I was at a wellness center, which was like a gym. And I did a lot of their intake for new clients, things like that, using kind of my exercise phys background. And then I also was a contract athletic trainer at the school I was at, your favorite school, right? You say it. You remember how to say it?
I always butcher it.
So I was at Enumclaw.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I was at Enumclaw for, it was 15 years that I was there.
You were there quite some time. Yeah.
I was, yes. So I did a couple of years as an outreach and then I moved into teaching where I was part-time teacher and then the athletic trainer after school. And so I was there until they decided to kind of shrink the program I was involved with. And so then I found myself at Kentwood, which is currently where I'm at. I love it because it's about 10 minutes away from my parents' house.
Oh, that's nice.
Yes. And I am an only child. So I love being around my parents. My mom gets to just come and spend time with me at events and things like that. So it's kind of cool. And so I teach full-time sports medicine here at the high school. I'm not doing athletic training at the moment as far as contracted through the school, but I do some per diem work on the side with the company that is contracted with them. So that's kind of where I'm at now. I'm just finishing up my admin internship and going from there.
Yeah, you're working on your doctorate right now, aren't you?
I have my doctorate. I actually went back for a second master's.
Because you don't have enough to do?
Right. Yeah. I
Yeah.
just, I've got to be busy 24/7. So,
So Dr. Bushmaker is now working on a second master's degree.
correct. In
Okay.
educational leadership.
So then what hat and robe do you wear to the graduation ceremony? The doctorate one or
My
the
doctoral
master's?
one.
Okay,
Yep.
just
Yep.
checking. Just checking. I like the
I love to
sleep.
be the center of attention. It's my
There you go.
gray with blue, and our colors are black and green. So,
Yeah,
it
nice
is what
hats
it
for
is.
that. But I like the sleeves for the master's degree because you can hide your phone in there. Hopefully,
Mine
my
actually has
administrator.
pockets,
Oh, very nice.
like full pockets. So you have the cut-throughs that go into, like, you can get to your clothing, but you also have the pockets that go in there as well.
Ah, very nice.
There's
Very
a
nice.
benefit to both. I just like the tam. I
Can't.
wore it literally for like 3 days after I got it in the mail. It was fantastic.
I would too. And welcome our other interviewer, Tim Masicki.
Hey.
Looks like you're back. How you doing, buddy?
Job security.
Yeah,
Love
you
it.
know, working at an all-boys school, we always have job security, don't we, my friend? We're gonna get started with just talking now about what you're doing outside of athletic training. You are a full-fledged stock eliminator drag racer in a 65 Red Valiant.
Yes, I am.
And that car is pretty damn cool. I was just looking at it
You drive
again.
it?
I
Oh,
do, yes.
oh, I am so jealous now.
So I am a Mopar girl at heart. So I have numerous cars. I started once again in high school is kind of where I found I shouldn't, I mean, I we rebuilt my first car in high school, but
And
I've
what
been
kind of
around
car
it.
was that?
That was a 71 Barracuda.
Oh, very nice. Okay, good.
Yes. So it's Toro red. So it's the orange. It's got a 360 motor in it. Something we just kind of took some leftover race parts that we had around and put together a motor for it.
Now, you said had around. Who happened to have all these parts around for?
So I actually got into drag racing with my dad. I went to my first race when I was 6 weeks old, Sears Point Raceway up in Sonoma.
Oh, yeah.
I was born and raised in San Diego, so we had quite a few racetracks around us. And then we moved up to Washington when I was 10. I've been drag racing basically my whole life. When I was younger and I was getting, well, I guess I would say early teens, my dad was like, "Do you want a junior dragster or a real car?" And I was like, "Real car when I'm 16." So we started when I was right before we moved, my dad built a new car. He's got a 76 Velari. And he sold our 72 Barracuda. That was our race car at the time.
Oh no.
And it was my mom and I both were heartbroken about it, like absolutely heartbroken about it. And so he promised me that one day he would get me another Barracuda, which is how it came to be my one that I rebuilt in high school. We found it. There was a guy who had posted something in the paper, and I used to scour the paper every day, back in the day before we had Craigslist. But I would scour the paper looking for any kind of Barracuda. We found two of them for like $1,500 that was buried in blackberry bushes up here. And so we took two cars and created one.
Nice.
And that was something like in between all the hours I worked in high school, I would pop back home and we would, dad would, we had a whiteboard. He'd write out the lists of everything needed to be done that day. And I would just crank away at it. And then, then we'd get a new list the next day. And so,
Very cool. As a kid, I grew up, my dad was a shop owner mechanic. So as soon as I put two and two together, I'm like, oh my God, we have to have Angela on here about this. But I didn't realize your dad was part of it as well. So that
Oh
just,
yeah.
it makes it fun when you get to do stuff with your parents like that.
My mom was so excited when I got old enough that she didn't have to, not that she didn't love it, but she didn't have to go out to the garage as much. So once I figured out what all the tools were, then she was super excited that she could pop out there and
Because she didn't have to worry so
she'd walk out
much.
and be like, "Hey, everything okay? Yep, we're good. Okay, back
Still
inside." So,
10 fingers, still 10 toes. Yes, Mom. Yep.
we're
Yep.
good. So, yeah.
So how do you deal with, as an athletic trainer, medical situations arrive and what can happen to the human body. And here you are pushing a 65 Valiant. And I'm looking at the picture on my left right now. And it's kind of cool. I love
It
old
is cool.
cars. But knowing what could happen, how do you compartmentalize and deal with the potential of injury versus I mean, I hate to say the need for speed, but you know, it's NHRA. So right. Yeah, you're going. Yep.
I think the biggest thing for me that always kind of, I just always felt safe in race cars. One of the biggest things that I think was kind of the key factor for it was every car that we've gotten, we've built from a street car. So there hasn't been any cars that we've gone out and be like, yeah, I want that car, pull it into my trailer, we're good to go. So we've always taken street cars and turned them into race cars. So watching the process of putting things in like a roll bar, every year we check our new requirement, safety requirement. For example, you know, the different jackets we have to wear, the pants we have to wear. And even since I started racing around 2002 is we really had a, we've watched the whole kind of process. We used to be able to race where we had long sleeve shirts. You had to wear long sleeve shirts and pants, closed toed shoes. After that, then they said, okay, well now you need to wear race pants. Well, at first it was a jacket first. So we had to wear, you know, a jacket, a race jacket that has all the, you know, fireproof material and stuff like that. And then we went into, okay, now you passed a certain ET. So estimated time, how far you are under, you know, how quick you go, I guess. You have more safety equipment. So the higher the risk, the more safety equipment we need to wear. So as of right now, I wear pants. So SFI approved pants, jacket, helmet. Wait, I don't have to wear a Hans unit, but that is something that in some of the, you know, top fuel categories, pro stock, they have to wear the Hans device.
Now for people that don't know what the Hans device is, Tim's sitting there nodding. Can you explain what the Hans device is?
So the Hans device is something, it actually came about specifically in NASCAR after at least the use in motorsports with Dale Earnhardt's accident.
Of course.
And so what he used to do, he's notorious for loosening his belts. And what they were found is that it was the force of the helmet being thrown forward, because when we wear a helmet, it adds weight to our head, then, you know, essentially creates more force when we're in any kind of accident or anything like that. So it actually attaches to the shoulders and attaches to the helmet to prevent that forward motion. And it's just a little bit more restrictive, but you can still turn your head both directions. It's the going down part that it restricts. So
it's almost like it prevents almost like a whiplash effect for a normal person driving 45 to 55 miles an hour, let alone what was your top speed in the last race?
We were actually at altitude. So I kind of give a little asterisk with that. So my car is actually a small carbureted motor and we have very little limited modifications that we can do to it. So, I mean, my car will run low 12s at an altitude track at about 106, 107.
So you're saying low 12s, you're talking quarter mile.
Yes, quarter mile. And then the speed, so mile per hour is about 106 mile per hour at the last race. At a sea level track like Pomona, you know, it'll run low 1140s, so 11.4 seconds to get to the other end in a quarter mile, and about 114 miles an hour. So.
And that's why they call it a stock car, because it doesn't have as many modifications.
Yep. And we're in the process of building a super stock car, which has more modifications. And so that is one of the things that we're, so the interesting thing to kind of get back to your point about the safety equipment, watching that stuff go into the car and all the thought and process and all the geometry and all the stuff, physics that goes into it, it's, the super stock car is what we call a cage in it. So a roll cage, and it comes up above. It's just a little bit more sturdy. So if the car were to roll, it essentially creates a cage around the driver. My stocker has what we call a roll bar. So it's got one bar that goes over the top, and then it's got bars that go on the side, but it's not as beefy as you would say as what we run in the super stock car. So watching that go into the car and all the thought process, and our belts get reapproved every 2 years. So even though the belts may only have been used 15 or 20 times, they get sent back, they get disassembled, get reassembled, reapproved, and sent back to us. And that happens every 2 years. So our safety equipment in there is pretty, I mean, we're pretty on top of everything that we need to do as far as staying safe. So for me, it's when I think about like what could happen. And I can tell you, being at the racetrack, I've seen more things outside of the car than I actually saw in the car. Just a perfect example of this was we were racing in Las Vegas and I'm sitting in my car. I'm all buckled in, ready to go. I'm about four pairs back. And the way that it's set up at Las Vegas is you come kind of behind the tower where they keep all like the equipment and all that stuff. You come behind the tower and it's kind of a blind curve a little bit. Well, I was sitting in my car. My mom comes running over. She's like, you know, and she's like, one of the racers just got hit. And I'm like, what? And so she's like, come here. So I get out of the race car, which my equipment's, it's a 5-piece harness, real quick to get off, throw my helmet off, you know, kind of run out there. And what had happened was, is that we tend to coast a lot with our race cars to keep the temperature down. And so a car was coming around the corner, coasting. The person who got hit was looking down the racetrack, but wasn't looking around the corner and didn't see the racer come around the corner and essentially just rolled up on his leg.
Ouch.
He's laying, like we had to push the car off of him because it had literally rolled up his leg, open tib fib fracture.
Ooh.
So I'm down there and I'm just hanging on to his leg. And, you know, everybody's like kind of freaking out. They call our safety safari, which is basically they have EMS on site. They have people trained, you know, to put out fires, all that stuff. So they were still running cars down the track. So they had to stop that, brought them down by us. You know, obviously my athletic training skills kicked in and I'm like, okay, no water, no this, because knew he was probably going to go into surgery.
Right. Yeah.
Yep. So it was one of those things, like that's one of the things that, you know, a lot of what happens at the racetrack is, as sad as it is, you're safer on the racetrack a lot of times than in the pit area. So
what do you think about that, Tip?
That's the truth. There's a lot of moving parts and people don't realize there's so many moving parts. I mean, I'm a huge NASCAR fan.
Yeah.
Like, and I've been to Pomona and watched the drag races out there, but I'm a huge, huge NASCAR guy. And the pits are dangerous.
Oh, absolutely. And what
highly dangerous.
What people don't understand is cars have the right of way there. So it's completely different than everywhere else.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cars have the right of way. So like if you're walking out in front of somebody, you're probably going to get hit. And it's going to hurt you more than it'll hurt the car.
The car won't even
notice. I got real bumpers.
Yeah, I'm looking at it. They're steel. Look at that.
Yeah.
Chrome.
Yeah.
Steeled out. Looks nice. Yeah. That'll do some damage to a body.
Yep.
So this costs a lot of money.
It does.
That's the curious part. How much time do you actually spend trying with sponsorships? And have you ever asked the NETA to sponsor you?
I think no, ooh. I haven't. I need to get on that.
Ooh.
You should.
That concept cool that there.
Right?
You know what? I like that.
I have a couple little irons in the fire. So we do, you know, to be perfectly honest, I do a lot of local races. I do some mostly on the West Coast. I haven't ventured back East yet. My goal is to go to US Nationals one year in Indianapolis. That's kind of our bread and butter race of the year. It's over Labor Day weekend.
I just
need my school district to start after Labor Day because that's usually right in the beginning of our school year.
Of course.
But one of the things with that, like I usually go on the West Coast quite a bit. I've talked with a couple people. We don't really in stock eliminator necessarily super stock unless you run one of the pro categories and kind of dabble down in stock or super stock. There's not a ton of sponsorship. There are some, but it's mostly like, who do you know? What company do you work for? Is it relevant? You know, so a lot of things like that. I think if I had a bigger presence in Texas, I think that might be a little bit easier as far as getting the NATA on board. But there's quite a few things that I've kind of thought about in the process. We have these things called decals that go on the side of our cars that shows what products we use. And so that's kind of one of it. It sounds weird, but it's like kind of a little sponsorship that goes associated with it. I actually, what kind of brought this on was I had posted on Facebook, I won my first divisional race two weekends ago in Boise, Idaho. And so
I saw that. Congratulations.
Thank you. It's been a long time coming. You know, it's one of those, you get down to semis, get down to the finals, and sometimes it doesn't go your way and sometimes it does. So that was kind of a fun one. With that, we get sponsorships as far as like, I run this product. If you win or runner up, you can get like you know, $200-$400 here and there based off of the product. So it can actually, you get almost more with the what we call the contingency than you would do with the actual purse of the race. So to answer your question, it is expensive. We do a lot of work ourselves. You know, I remember when I was younger in high school, even before that, being 8, 9, 10 o'clock at night out in the garage, assembling motors to get it in the car. We have a lot of good people that do our machine work for us and assemble stuff for us now, just because life gets in the way and it's not as easy. But I also work a ton to pay for it.
I was going
to
say, then you gotta teach, you clinical on the side. Mm-hmm.
I do cheerleading camps in the summertime.
That's right. You do.
Competition you were just down during the school year.
Yep. Just down here, a month ago, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. Gotta pay to play, right?
I do. Yeah. Mm-hmm. My friend literally, she's like, you work more than anybody I know. And I'm like, I know. Yep.
Yeah. You have an expensive hobby. That's why.
I do. Yes.
Well,
yes.
Plus you're an athletic trainer on top of that. So exactly. All together, that's a lot of work.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Man.
It's a good day when I'm bored. Let's put it that way.
That's very true in many ways.
As an only child, it's really easy for me to entertain myself. So.
So when you travel, how many people travel with you that help you through this whole?
Me and my dad.
That's it? Just the two of us?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Oof, that's
yep.
And is he racing?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So he races, he still has his Valiant. And then I have my Valiant, and then we're building the new super stock car, which is it'll be a 72 Barracuda.
That's the one I've seen pictures of online, correct?
Yes.
Yep. Mm-hmm. In the shop.
Yep. In the shop. We just dropped the motor in this last weekend. So I got home from state and then went straight to putting a motor in on Sunday. So
What kind of motor we got?
Right now we've got a 360 in it. We're going to run that for a little while. That's what dad has in his car. So we had some parts. When we got the car itself, it was actually raced by a friend of ours. So it is probably one of those that we bought that was already a race car. It was a race car, I would say, almost from day one. It was wrecked a couple months after.
Yikes.
Yeah, whoever had it bought it, and then the friend of ours found it in a junkyard, and so he turned it into a race car. And so it was in a trailer for a good 14-15 years, never touched. And we asked, what are you doing with it? And he's like, I don't know. We're like, can we buy it? And he's like, sure. And so we literally took it back down. We got, you know, whole new roll bar, roll cage, all that stuff in it. And so we've been putting that together for the last probably 2 years between paint and all that stuff. So just kind of chipping away at it. So
I know got to pick what you got when you got it and have fun with it. Right.
Mm-hmm.
With all this stuff that you do, whether it's clinically athletic training, teaching, cheer camps, where I presume you are a clinical athletic trainer taking care of everything there.
Yes. I kind of bounce back and forth between that and what we call a camp manager. So I run a lot of the camps just because I've been around forever. So
this is a lot of, requires a lot of mental focus. Can you share some strategies on how you stay focused and calm under all these different pressures?
I think the biggest thing, well, first off, I pick things that I love to do. So as kind of sappy as it sounds, I picked a profession that I love, never thought I would teach, but here I am. And I love it. I love my students.
Sounds very familiar. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's one of those things like, you know, sometimes you kind of get thrown into areas and you realize that they're actually where you're meant to be. And I think one of the biggest things for me, and I joke around saying, well, I do the cheer camps and stuff like that because I love to do it, not because I get paid great or because I get to see friends, which I do, but I just love doing it. I love traveling. I think for me, the biggest thing for strategies is it took me a long time to realize that I also have to pick and choose what to say yes to and what to say no to. It's really easy to say yes. Athletic trainers, that's our go-to word, right? It's always yes. We're doing it for everybody else.
That's a four-letter word, but yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Fine is fine. Four-letter word is fine. I am fine.
I tell all the new people, no is a good word to use a lot.
Mm-hmm.
No is a fantastic word.
Fantastic word. And so I think I look at opportunities and I find what's, it kind of sounds self-serving, but it's what I need to do for myself at that point. I use my competitions during the school year. I use that as my mental break, take time for myself. And so I do that. And then, you know, it's just a matter of when I try to be as present as I can when I'm where I'm at. This last week, when I was at the race, we had a couple issues with my race car towards the later rounds. They become very quickly, like you're 30 minutes. Sometimes you get back to the trailer and you're, you know, charging your battery, things like that. Literal battery, also physical battery. But you get back there and it's just quick things. And, you know, we were having issues with the car starting. And so I just remember like the final round, I was race, my competitor was in the car and I had already had my gear on, stuff like that. My dad's trying to start the car because there's nothing I could do from the inside to start it. We finally get the car started. We told him literally, I'm going to drive up there. I'm not going to shut the car off, just so you know. And he was great. He got ready, you know, and was, you know, didn't make me sit there forever to watch my temperature gauge come up because that affects kind of how the car runs. You know, I remember I pulled into the water box and it was kind of a frazzle, like, get it done. We got to get there. We got to pull in there. Like, you know, like what's going on? And I remember my dad looked at me and I did my burnout and I pulled up there and he literally looked at me and goes, breathe. And I went, okay. I'm like, yeah, dad, that's what I have, right?
Thanks, dad.
Thanks for reminding me that. But I just remember like, he just literally like put his hands up, like just okay. And like took a deep breath and breathed, you know, exhaled. And from there I was like, okay, like I've got this. And so a lot of times it's, you know, like when I'm in the race car, it's really easy to focus. You know, I always joke around and be like, what did they say about me on the PA? You know, and my dad's like, I don't know. I wasn't listening. I can't hear anything in the car. And so it's one of those things, like when you're in the car, you're just focused. When I'm wherever I'm at, whatever I'm doing, I just try to be as mentally and physically present as possible in that moment. And that just keeps me from burning out. You just have to have that kind of mental, you know, compartmentalization, just kind of going through and just making sure everything is, you know, like, okay, I'm here now. I'm going to be present. I'm going to enjoy what I'm doing. And then I will deal with this when I get back into that mode. So it's just kind of one of those things that you just have to say no.
No, great word. Do things
for yourself.
Great word.
Okay, right. Yep. You know, sometimes you have to put you first, as odd as it is for athletic trainers to do, because that's not our nature at all.
Yeah. Tim, you're pretty bad at that. I know I have been for years, just getting better now.
Well, I think we all start out like that, but mm-hmm. then you also have to find some that you get away from it all. So that's like why I mm-hmm. do NASCAR, because yeah. mm-hmm. there's everyone like, why do you like NASCAR? You take care of all these kids. I go, yeah, that's why I like NASCAR, because I don't have to take care of anybody.
Well, you know? There's one other thing you do also for mental health there, Tim.
Smoke cigars and drink scotch?
Well, while you're watching the Dodger game.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, there's the Dodgers too.
I'm a Padre fan. I'm sorry.
Oh, we might have to end end the interview now.
Is that team that plays that other team?
They're south of us. We got one listener down there, so we got to be kind. But cigars, scotch, Dodgers.
Hey, that comes back to being loyal, right? I mean, I was born and raised in San Diego. I went to those games when there was like 1,500 people there.
I think there's still 1,500 people. Yeah.
There's still probably 1,500 people there. Yeah.
We just lost our one San Diego listener. Yep.
They're gonna beat us.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I mean, I lucked out. I got home yesterday and watched both Dodger games back to back. I left early yesterday.
We gotta have our thing, right?
My family are Cubs fans. So they, our group text message, because they're from Chicago. So in the group text message is always like, Cubs win, Cubs win. Well, when the Padres beat them, I was like, Padres win!
Cricket. You must not get a lot of text messages from your Cricket. Family this year.
Yeah. Oh, no. Boy. Oh,
no.
Boy.
No.
All right, let's, we're talking cars. So shifting gears, I'm sticking with that today. As an athletic trainer, you are definitely seen as an advocate for athletes and well-being with what you do as a drag racer. Do you see yourself as an advocate for health and safety in drag racing as well?
I think so. I mean, I think a lot of it, you know, like it's funny. There's over the last probably decade or two, we've kind of seen a different shift of who's coming into the profession. We have a lot of friends that are older, you know, that have been racing for years. Like I look at some, a lot of my, you know, dad's friends, my friends, family friends that I've been around my whole life, you know, and it's so funny to kind of sit back and, you know, you just have that conversation and kind of go a little bit back to that safety gear. I mean, like, they're like, why do I have to wear this and blah, 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 blah. You know, it, and it's funny because it's like, still I look at it and there's a lot of times where I'm like, I'm like, why do I have to wear it? And my car's going 10 seconds, you know, like, or not 10 seconds, but like 5 seconds faster than this car, but they get to go out in t-shirt and pants. I'm like, you know, like if I hit them or that 8 second car hits them, what's going to protect them? And I think one of the biggest things is just, we always push. I like explaining to my, you know, family friends, explaining to them like, well, this is why we wear these gear. This is why we do this. We've had, you know,
You're educating.
I am. We, you know, and there's been people in my life, like for example, I was at race when I was younger, where one of the racers pulled around at the end of the track. He grabbed his time slip, took off his helmet, and had a massive heart attack right there. And died.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
And we're looking at it going, you know, and everybody kind of, it sounds weird, but like people just drove past him. They thought he was just looking down at his ticket. And when he didn't come back to the trailer, you know? And so it's like things like that, that I think about, like things happening at the racetrack, you know, and just little things that I do, you know, and that a lot of us do a little bit different. It's just such a family atmosphere that we're always looking out for people, you know? And so when, you know, we've also had instances at racetracks where somebody collapsed, they had a massive heart attack, we're over there doing CPR on them. And so it's like little things like that, that I think is just when you have more people around that are trained in just even basic first aid CPR stuff, but being that advocate for like, hey, this is why we're doing this and educating people, you know, it makes more sense. And it kind of keeps kind of everybody from complaining as much. You know, they're still going to find stuff to complain, but
if you're not complaining, you're not alive, is what my dad says sometimes. Not, so
yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Elevate your knowledge, ignite your curiosity, and compete with the best minds at events hosted by the American Academic Competition Institute. AACI's sports medicine competitions feature practical exercises, challenging quizzes, specialty tests, and keynote speakers that foster knowledge and social engagement in healthcare and sports medicine. Go to AACITest.org for more information on upcoming regional and national competitions. Sign up for the Ultimate Intellectual Showdown.
So when you're at the track, how many people know what you do and come up to you and go, hey, I have this problem with my elbow or my back is hurting. What do you think?
I've been around quite a while. It happens all the time. I can't tell you how many people have stepped out of a trailer and be like, I sprained my ankle. What do you think I should do? I'm like, okay, let's get an ace wrap on you. Like just little things like that, that I'm like, okay. Or like they'll pop by the trailer. Do you have your kit? Like I've had friends of ours with kids that got stung by a bee and I'm like, oh, I have, let me get my, you know, my swat, you know.
So you have kit ready to go.
I do. Yeah. I have a little bit more beefy first aid kit in the trailer. Usually if it's a closer race where I drive, I mean, my dad calls me a princess. He typically drives the truck and trailer. And then I meet him. I usually fly in on my commercial plane. But I go down there, you know, and then I meet him. And then sometimes I'll fly back. Sometimes I'll drive back, depending on what my schedule is. He totally gets it. Boise, we just drove back together. We got home about 3 a.m. and my alarm went off at 5:30 to get up and go to school the next day. So,
ouch.
Yeah. I mean, it's just one of those things, like they always come in. They're like, hey, what it, you know, and then of course my dad's like, oh, my shoulder really hurts. And I'm like, well, it's because you're doing X, Y, and Z, like, you know, and he kind of jokes around about it. But
then the question is, does he listen?
Well, he listens because I make him listen.
Oh, okay. Okay. Just checking.
We do this thing in our family called you were right, I was wrong. Because for years it was like, we'd sit there and stare at each other and I'm like, I know I'm right. So I'd be like, say it. So now we just, you're right, I was wrong. So it's just a thing that we do in our family that kind of tries to keep the peace a little bit.
I'd be afraid to instill that in my family. Yeah, it sounds good.
Yeah, it sounds good. Oh, I'm right most of the time, in case you're wondering. So it's not painful.
Of course.
Athletic trainers are always right.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
I'm always right at work. Outside of that, it's a different story.
I just sit back and I'd be like, oh, wait, say that again. What?
Yeah.
What? Oh, you're feeling better? Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, that's good.
The doctor said, what? Well, wasn't that what I said too?
Huh. Well, now I get to use the excuse. I'm like, well, the doctor did say this. I mean, it's a
doctorate. Hey, but it's a doctorate. You could still say it. That's right. That's the one reason I'd get my PhD in something to make my wife say Dr. Halleck.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know how that'd go too. So if she listens to this episode, which I'm pretty sure she will not.
No.
I will make you call me Dr. Halleck at some point, honey.
I love it.
Yeah.
Obama.
Yeah. She probably would too, right when she said it.
Does NHRA have athletic trainers travel? I know a NASCAR does.
They don't because there's a lot of them that are just independent crews. We have a lot of EMTs. We have a lot of, you know, they use usually local EMS on site. So they don't really have athletic trainers that travel with them. But also the crew isn't, it's physically taxing for some of like the professional crews. I mean, they tear down a motor and put it back together within their 75 minutes between passes.
That's amazing.
But it's not like the pit stops that they would do where they have that physical activity per se of NASCAR. So that's kind of one of the differences. Like a lot of ours is independent. Like we joke around, like we're on the track for less than 12 seconds. And then we're off the track and we sit for 3 hours. There's a couple athletic trainers that I know that race with me, at least one up in, she's from Boise area. And I worked with her with varsity and I've known her for quite some time.
What's her name? Let's shout
Courtney
out.
Courtney Alley is her name.
Courtney Alley.
Yeah. Yeah. And she's amazing. And her and I commiserate all the time about athletic training stuff. And, you know, it's kind of one of those that her dad's like, hey, I think my daughter's interested in athletic training. Can she come talk to you? I'm like, sure, come on down. So we had some great conversations and that was kind of her chosen pathway that she went. So, but yeah.
See, now I'm finding out there's athletic trainers doing that. You need to call NETA, get that logo, some sponsorship money.
I do.
Enough in dues.
Yeah. And for years I was like, I wouldn't necessarily be like, I'm a teacher. I'd be like, I'm an athletic trainer. So when we fill out our tech card, we give them all the information. So when they're announcing, they have background information and I'm like, I'm an athletic trainer. And I still claim that as my main profession. And then my side profession is teaching. So.
Well, you did go to school to become a healthcare professional as an athletic trainer. So teaching just kind of fell into place.
Yep.
Yep. Mm-hmm. I know that feeling very well.
I say I teach so that I can athletic train.
That's kind of funny. Whereas Tim has the privilege of not teaching. He is only a clinical athletic trainer and the director of health services at Loyola. So
took me 35 years to get there. So
that's it.
So there's hope is what you're saying. No, just kidding.
Gray hair in 35 years.
Well, I'm getting there. I got some of the gray hair. I'm still 8 years behind you. So I'll catch up at some point.
And lots of scotch or cigars.
Mm-hmm. I think that goes with healthcare in general. So,
yes.
Mm-hmm. But
you've kind of developed a unique pathway, Ange. Athletic training, teaching, drag racing, cheer camps. Mm-hmm. How do all these worlds collide and work every year? I mean, there's got to be a point where you're just pulling your hair out thinking, I'm not going to do it. And then you change your mind.
My eye calendar, that's how they collide. I put everything on my calendar and I share my calendar. And so everybody, like my parents have access to my calendar. So they know where I'm at and what I'm doing. So most of the time, that way we plan a lot of stuff around racing. When I was in high school, it was more around racing. At one point, actually, I asked my parents, I said, well, obviously it sounds weird, but I'm going to college. Do I really need to go to high school graduation? Because there's a race up in Canada. And my dad's like, it's Father's Day weekend. Just graduate. I said, okay. I'm like, but we could go celebrate up in Washington or up in Canada. And he's like, ugh. And I'm like, okay, fine. So I think for me, I've just kind of gotten it down to a science. I work a lot of the same camps. I work a lot of the same events. There is a part of me that literally in the back of my brain, every year when the racing calendar comes out, I'm like, please move this race. It's in the middle of summer. It's hot down there. It's like,
which race is that?
I call it Satan's Sauna. It's down in Woodburn, Oregon. It's a great facility, but in the middle of July, it's like 95 to 100 degrees. And you're out there from 7 a.m. until 8 or 9 at night. You're in and out of a fire suit. You know, a lot of our, you know, most of our trailers don't have air conditioning or anything like that. So we're just kind of at the mercy of, we have an enclosed trailer, so at least we get out of the sun. But, you know, there are people that still do open trailers. So it's just kind of one of those things. I've just really looked at schedules and I've had to make some hard choices of doing things that I really want to do versus things that I might need to do. And so it's just a matter of, I basically got my schedule down to a science at this point. The only thing that throws a wrench is when they start moving races around on me. For example, last year, Boise was June 2nd, prom.
Ah.
And one of my best friends from California, who I've grown up with through drag racing, she used to babysit me when I was little at the racetrack. Her son was going with one of my fast pitch players who he happened to meet at your competition.
Really?
Yep. Yep. So they went to prom together. So I flew him up. So I flew to Boise, raced. I was there Friday morning, made two passes on Friday morning, flew back to Seattle, picked him up from the airport, got ready. Saturday, we had prom Friday night. Saturday morning, I was like, all right, my flight's at 7 a.m. So I got to the airport and then my mom took him to the airport, a couple hours later. And so it's just a matter of sometimes you just make it work.
Now, out of curiosity, what high school was this young man from?
He was Esperanza.
All right, then.
So we met him when we were staying at my best friend's house.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah. So we were down there for your competition, but he just happened to be
got it.
Where we were at.
Well, if you'd like a laugh, and my daughter, she doesn't listen to this either. My youngest has listened to a couple episodes. My oldest, actually, that's where she got her prom date. And she goes, obviously, to a completely separate school because I work in an all-boys school. She went to the competition. One of the guys heard her talking about prom and asked her. Mm-hmm. And brave young man. He was lucky to survive.
I sure did threaten him. I said, I'm just going to tell you that my kids, my students, they mean a lot to me. And if you mess with her, I'm going to hurt you because I can. Because you are my nephew. And Yeah.
And there you go.
Yep. I told him he had to come up with some special promposal for her. And he did. And we played it at our state competition.
Oh, wow.
In front of 900 people.
Oh, nice. Mm-hmm. Embarrassing.
He said, I'm stepping
it.
Up to the plate. And it was him hitting a home run. And then you hear the coach on the other field yell at him because he hit a ball and went into their practice. But it was great.
That's funny. That's cute. That's cute.
Yeah.
What's louder, drag racing or competition cheer?
Ooh,
that they're, according to my watch, they're about equal. When I'm in the car, it's not as loud. If I'm standing outside the car, I would definitely say that the drag racing is louder, but I choose to go more in the warm-up room than actually on the competition floor. So I don't have to listen to that constant bass all the time. But we have become very accustomed to using earplugs now. So now we use earplugs.
Earplugs are a good thing. I use them in basketball all the time. Mm-hmm. I love them. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I've been in the middle of dance competition, so yep. I can understand that. Standing behind alcohol dragster, mm-hmm. Fired up. Yeah, I believe that. That's kind of similar. Yeah, yeah, very, very yep. close.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good question. I like that one, Tim.
Well, I mean, I'm like you. We don't have cheerleading. We're all boys.
Yeah.
So.
Does make it a little easier on Friday nights, that's for sure.
Totally.
Yeah.
We have competition cheering now down in the CIF.
Yes, we do. Mm-hmm. All over the nation now, everywhere.
Yep. My Kentwood team actually doubled up at state this year for state championship. So,
oh, wow. Congratulations. So it's funny
when your cheer team is better than your football.
Wow.
They have like 33 state championships. Oh. I think football's got two.
Do they have more cheerleaders than football players?
No.
Okay.
But there are
there are some schools that have more cheerleaders than players nowadays.
For sure. For sure. One of the schools right down the road from us, they bring about 60 cheerleaders to camp.
This is kind of funny. Just all the different directions we're going with all your different skill sets. So this is kind of fun.
When do you sleep?
Great question. When do you sleep?
Usually between about 11:30 at night till about 5:30 in the morning. That's about, depending if I have other things to do. But as an athletic trainer, I will tell you, I learned real quick to sleep anywhere and everywhere you can. Oh, that's also in racing.
Totally.
Oh, no. These kids go, you can sleep almost standing up. I go, yeah.
Absolutely. And with racing, they make fun of me at the racetrack because that is my one time that I get to kind of decompress. So I read books. I read romance novels. And I sit there and I have my reclining chair. Hey, no hate on that romance
novel. I'm not hating, it's just romance novels.
Yeah, I mean, hey, whatever. So I sit in my reclining chair and they laugh at me because they're like, drive by, they're like, hey, Angela. I'm like, hey, you know, go away so I can sit and read my book. But that's just like, I just sit there and they're like, you could fall asleep anywhere, anytime. I said, yep. And you know what taught me that was growing up at the racetrack. Because,
good point. Yeah.
Because when I was little, they used to always yell at my mom, you need to put headphones on her. You know, she's like, listen, does it look like it's bothering her? She is out to the world. And so, you know, it's just something that I don't know if I was ever trained to do that, but it's just anytime, any place. If there is a 20-minute break in a competition, I'm taking a nap.
So. I've been known to doze off during sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
When you're like those real bad games, you're like, oh, mm-hmm. God.
Well, I have no idea what you're talking about. Nope.
Yeah, you too.
That's why I do things like scorebook.
Exactly.
I score for baseball.
Operate the clock. You have to operate the clock.
Yeah. And that's the only way. I love watching sports, which is why I went into this profession. But I will tell you, there are times where it's a C team game. And there have been times where my athletic director loved me so much. They gave me a C team tournament on a Saturday all day. So that's like our freshman teams up here.
So that AD didn't get a Christmas present, I hope, that year.
Well, we were like, hey, are we getting food? Because like, there's no time in between games to like, and he's like, oh, I might be able to order a pizza for you. And I'm like, cool. Thanks. Appreciate it.
Better order something there,
buddy.
We've
only been here for 12 hours. You know, it is what it is.
So here's a question. Which one's your truest love? If you had to pick. I know that's a tough question.
That's going to be racing.
Ah, really? Yeah,
it's going to be racing.
Drag racing. That one wins.
Yeah, that one wins.
Athletic trainer mostly, second?
Yes, for sure. Okay. For sure. But also like the good thing about it is that a lot of the times that we race is in the summer and towards spring, and a lot of the stuff we can do for racing is Saturday, Sunday. So, you know, you can roll in on Friday night after sports, race Saturday, Sunday, and be back Monday for sports. So
you can make them work together.
Mm-hmm.
And have for how long now?
I've been racing since 2002 and I've been certified since 2004.
So quite some time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're such a baby.
21 years. Wow.
I don't feel like it. I don't feel like it anymore.
You got certified in 2004?
Yep. Yeah.
Oh, I just my back just gave out on me.
Well, why? Did you try and run across the field again?
No,
I got a video of that. That was funny.
Well, yeah, because he was on the other side of the field.
Yeah, 120 yards. That was great. JV soccer player goes down.
Why does
down.
That always happen? Why are they always on the away? Other side of the field?
The worst was the way Eli set up at his school. His training room looks at the field. Uh-huh. So we're in the training room during a JV soccer game talking. And literally on the far side, we see the kid go down. I go, furthest that better point not possible. Be my kid. And all of a sudden I'm looking, I go, oh, he's wearing blue. Damn it.
Have a nice jog.
We had a code with my boys.
Yeah, I got out to him. The kid goes, I think I'm all right. I go, no, you're not. I'm going to stay here for a minute. I need to catch my breath.
I told them, I said, listen, I said, we came up with a little code. And the code thing was like, you do this. And I know that I can take my time getting out to you. Because I'm like, with you know, those boys soccer players. I'll tell you what.
Oh, there should be Academy Awards.
I'm sure there are somewhere.
Yeah. He was laughing the whole time. And I'm like, I might have pulled my hamstring. I don't know.
You needed treatment.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Afterwards, he looked like he did. It was kind of entertaining.
There's been a couple times where I've had to have some of my players help me off the field. I'm a little accident prone. So that's kind of also part of the reason why I went into it.
If him or me were to ever fall on the field in front of any of our guys, we'd be hung. I mean, just
we would never hear the end of it.
Never.
That was it. That'd be done.
I think even if I were to tear my hamstring, I would make pretend like I was okay. I wouldn't even just and then go cry in the corner somewhere, but not in front of
them. Yep. Couldn't do it. Nope.
I took a baseball one time to like the leg on side of my leg, and I was standing there, and the kid looked at me and he goes, "Man, you took that like a champ." And you're like, "Heck yeah, I did." I got out to my car and I just lost it. But I was like, I'm telling you what, I was like, I'm not crying in front of these guys.
Don't let them see you cry. Let them see you cry. Exactly.
There's
exactly.
No crying in baseball.
Nope. I remember it was right before, must have been spring break. And I remember I was laying by a pool in Vegas because that's my go-to. That's probably my stress relief is going to Vegas, laying by the pool.
There
sunshine,
you go.
Sunshine is my thing. And I went there and I remember I was by the pool and little girl was walking by with her mom and she's like, "Mommy, what's wrong with her leg?" Because I must have, it was massive. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, oh God, I'm like, I don't know, like just massive bruise on there. And it was there for months, but I'm like, it's cool. Just wore it like a champ.
So you're saying you're accident prone. What's the worst injury you've had?
Well, I basically destroyed my left ankle. So I've gotten both ankles.
And how did you do that?
The first time I stepped in a hole at Sac State.
I've been at Sac State. I believe that.
Yeah. So I was walking to the dorm, stepped in a hole. Let's see.
Oh, that's even worse. Okay. Got it.
That was my left. My right, I was actually racing in Vegas. And you know how they have like the metal plates in the road? Then they have that kind of, I guess, rubber section in between.
Of course.
And it had been raining and I was in my Nike Shocks and I like stepped just wrong in it and it just inverted. And I'm laying there and my dad's like, "Are you okay?" And I was like, "Just go get the truck." And I'm just laying on the ground and somebody walked by me and they're like, "Hey, you okay? You need," I'm like, "No, I'm fine." So I got, you know, I was like, "Okay, Dad, you need to go get me this and this and this." And it was so funny because it was like, he's like, "Okay, get in the car, go drive around. Let's see." And I was like, it's my gas, but we're good. I don't need any pressure on my brake. We're good. We have to do fuel check at the end of each pass, at least the first pass of the day. And so we go and take some of our fuel and they check it to make sure it's legal. I was up there and I'm standing there and they give us these little like pee cups and I'm literally like holding it. It's got fuel in it. And I'm looking at the trailer where we have to take it. And I'm looking at my car and I'm looking at the trailer and I'm like, this is not going to go well. And one of my friends walked by, she's like, "Oh, just give it to me, Angela." So she gives it, she goes up there and she does it for me. And I was like, "Thank you."
That and goes back to the princess comment from Dad. Yes. Right? Okay.
Well,
just checking.
It was literally cause I couldn't walk. I was on crutches.
Ah, okay.
Like it was bad. And then my left one again. So I had surgery after the first one. And then my left one again, I missed the last step on my deck. And I ruptured my repair and tore my deltoid.
Ligament. Yikes. Did your ankle dislocate?
No.
Okay, good. Good.
Well, it might have. I don't know. I laid back on the ground and I felt a pop. And then I crawled back into the house. And then I drove to University of Oregon the next day for cheer camp. So.
Of course you did. Because that's what athletic trainers do.
I threw my boot on and off I went.
Sounds about right.
Yeah, that's the profession in a nutshell right there. Yep. That is it right there.
At one point, I'm sitting watching the field with my foot in an ice bucket, just sitting there going, yeah, it is what it is.
Wow.
That's when when you get hurt, just can you come this way? And
yep, you're going to come this way. Yep, right over here.
we're coming up on an hour, and I don't know about you, but I'm always surprised at how quickly it comes. It seems like we just started a minute ago, and it's a ton of fun to talk with all our colleagues and friends and hear stories about it. But I obviously don't want to take too much time out of your day. But I at least have one more question. And if Tim has one, I was going to let him go first, though. You got anything, buddy?
No, I'm good.
Yeah, this has been fun. It's a lot of fun. I mean, talking drag racing, cheer and teaching and doctorate, just a great day. When you shift gears and you're thinking about it, what's the one piece of advice you give listeners interested in either athletic training or drag racing or the combination as a future?
I think one of the biggest things, and I think it's what's kind of helped me the most, is both in drag racing and in athletic training, is that I think a lot of people who are young or coming into either profession or hobby like that, tend to kind of shy away from people with experience. They either get intimidated by it, you know, either they feel, you know, sometimes you can feel embarrassed if you don't necessarily know things. And my biggest thing is like, use the people around you, use the experience you have, you know, that other people have, because so many times we miss out on so many things because we just didn't ask the questions.
So true.
We had the questions, we just didn't answer. You know, we just didn't ask it. We were embarrassed, or, you know, like just little things. Like, I always keep a notebook with me and I jot things down. I've been around cars enough. I know a lot, don't know everything, but sitting there and, you know, like we were taking a motor or transmission out of my dad's car last night. And literally he was like going through it. And he was like, what do you think? And I said, can you explain that to me again? And so like, I've become a lot better at it, even years into profession, years into racing, of saying, explain it to me. Why do you look at it that way? And asking those questions, because I know one of the things we're facing with drag racing is that we don't have a lot of young people coming into it. It's an expensive sport. Okay. It's an expensive hobby, and it's a hobby for a lot of people. I joke around saying I was born into it. I celebrated my first 8 birthdays at Sears Point Raceway. Like, it was like, oh, and yep, then I'm like, it was always it. The one right around 4th of July. Cause I'm June 25th. So it was like, oh, they even got fireworks for my birthday, but I always celebrated. And those were my family. Those were my friends. And so, you know, it's so interesting to me seeing all these people that have been around the sport and being around even athletic training, like watching that. Well, hey, why did you do it like that? You know, can you explain to me kind of the reasoning behind it? I'm not questioning what they're doing. I just want to know. So if I use it next time and somebody asks me, I can, you know, pass that knowledge on. And I think so much of it is lost. Like, we read textbooks, we read books. Like, you can only stare at like a parts manual so much without actually physically doing it and saying, why does that work like that? And I think that's a lot of times what so many of the, you know, people coming into professions or hobbies, you know, they just miss out so much on just experience and asking the question.
I think Tim would agree with that.
Eli and me have shared those exact thoughts with the younger ones. They can read a book. Mm-hmm. They know every test by name and all that, but when it comes down to it, it's just a guide.
Yeah.
It's not the end all be all, because you got to make this work and figure out how this happened and okay, yeah, this or that. Yep. It's not, nothing's textbook.
Nope. Not in this profession, not in this sport. Like, you think about all kinds of different things. You know, I think about things in drag racing. You're like, it should work this way, but it doesn't.
Something goes wrong and it doesn't make sense, but the manual says.
Well, I can look at the weather and I can look at what my car ran the day before and I can look at this and I look at that and I'm like, okay, my car should run this. So I predict what my car is going to run. I write it on my car and I go out there and I'm like, why did my car pick up 3? Or why did it slow down? I have a 10 mile an hour headwind and I ran faster now than I did yesterday with no headwind, you know? So there's a lot of things that kind of go into it, especially with, like, you know, drag racing and athletic training. Like, you just, so many things that you just have to look at it and be like, it's not textbook. people joke around with my car because my car is kind of an anomaly. It's a small motor car, gets affected by weather. And I was having a conversation with friends of ours that have been racing for years. And they said, how can you dial that car so well? And I said, because I just know how it reacts to wind. I know if it's blowing a certain mile per hour of wind, it's going to slow my car down. It's like one of those things, but it doesn't work for my dad's car. It might not work for the car next door. That might be the exact same car as mine, you know?
Experience.
So everything is so individualized just on everything.
Just like athletic training.
Yep.
Just like dealing with a patient. In your case, the patient in this case, instead of two limbs, has four wheels.
Yep. That diagnosis, man. I'll tell you what.
Doesn't matter if it's mechanical or clinical. You got to have that diagnosis.
Well, we threw it out there. Like, we're like, oh, I think, you know, somebody's like, oh, I think it's the battery. Okay, let's switch batteries. Nope, still didn't start. Okay, it's the starter. Like, it's like process of eliminations. It's the same thing we do with evaluations and injuries. So.
Yep. So true. And so equal. It's kind of funny. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Cars and people, so similar in so many ways. Just like our profession.
All about performance.
Yep, very true. On that note, I want to say thank you, Angela, for spending a lot of time out of your day with us and talking with us about all your loves in this world. That's great. This was fun. It was very entertaining and damn educational. So thank you.
Thank you. Anytime.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah, that's Tim, great. Thanks for joining us and helping out, Tim. Appreciate it, buddy.
Yeah, now I have football practice.
Ooh, have fun with that. Yeah, me too. I got to go get ready. Have a fantastic day, the both of you, and thanks for being on Wrap It Up Sports Medicine and More.
Awesome.
Have a great day.
Thank you. You too.
Bye.
Bye.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. Want to make sure you hear every episode? Remember to like, follow, and subscribe to our podcast. Don't forget to share our podcast with your colleagues, family, and friends. Your support will help more people find and enjoy our content. Wrap It Up Sports Medicine and More is directed by Eli Hallett. It is produced by Gabriel Hallett. Our theme music is by Coma Studios via Pixabay. The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are solely those of the contributors. Want to know more about us? Visit us at wrapituppodcast.com. That's with one P, wrapituppodcast.com. Wrap It Up Sports Medicine and More is a production of Hallett Consulting, LLC.